At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
All my stuff, John, and all our going after Trump is not about being anti-Trump. It's about being pro-American. It's standing up for the ideals that define the best of America.
Welcome to How to Fix It. I'm John Avlon. And this week we have with us California Governor Gavin Newsom. By many accounts and most polls, a front runner for the Democratic nomination should he choose to pursue it. But he has been governor for the last 7 years of a state that would have the GDP equivalent of the fifth largest nation on earth. And he's got a lot of policy and solutions and personal things we're going to get into today. Gavin Newsom, good to see you.
Good to be with you. Nice to be with you.
It is. So let's kick off with news of the day, Iran. You know, you were potentially a commander in chief. Governors don't always have foreign policy. California sort of does. Price of the pump is heading towards $6 as a result of this. But rather than look in the rearview mirror, if you were to become commander in chief and inherit this mess, what would you do? What is the end game with Iran?
Well, I know my status as governor of California, not a candidate for president. And so I, with caution and consideration to that, look, there was no end game. There was no clear goal that was established in advance by this administration. They continue to vacillate on that. They continue to, deviate increasingly from their original stated goals as it relates to regime change, as it relates to, quote unquote, obliterating their nuclear program, which we're told was already obliterated even before the initiation of this war. The consequences, the second, third tier consequences are now being felt globally. It's being felt with farmers and ranchers in my home state as it relates to the cost of fertilizer, not just the cost of fuel. You talk about $6 at the pump, potentially getting there soon in states like California. We're talking about dollars that are even higher for diesel fuel and the impacts that's having on working folks all across this country. Tie that into what he did on tariffs, those illegal tariffs. We were the first state to initiate a lawsuit against the illegal tariffs under the IEEPA, and now he's establishing them under a new section, which we also think is illegal. It has put it damper on the economy. We have stagflation mood music at the moment. You saw the GDP numbers, 0.7% in Q4 of last year, 92,000 jobs lost last month. You heard the Fed chair just a few days ago, last week, talk about the fact we haven't created a net new private sector job in 6 months. Donald Trump, across the board, this recklessness, and now this foray overseas and the inability to have had any understanding of the Strait of Hormuz and what to do about it is malpractice. There's not a prior administration that didn't game that out. And on the basis of what we've heard from Trump, he seemed, quote unquote, surprised by that, surprised by the reaction as it relates to Iran in terms of attacking other Gulf states. We have now the state of Israel in Lebanon. We have all kinds of consequences that will be felt for years and years, arguably for decades. And now he's having peers, fictitious conversations with himself as it relates to advanced negotiations. Just 48 hours ago, he asserted one thing, and now he's claiming altogether something different. So you ask me how I feel about it. I feel very strongly about it from the prism as governor of California and as a guy with four young kids that are wondering what the hell is going on in this country.
And they're right to ask that question. You point out that every other president's looked at the Strait of Hormuz and said that's one reason why kinetic escalation is a bad idea. Every other president in the last 50 years has also said Iran cannot be allowed to achieve a nuclear weapon. Do you agree with that? And if so, 100%. If you were to clean up this mess, you know, are you talking regime change, containment? How do you make sure they don't get the bomb?
Well, I'm just reflecting on a multiple year war in Gaza, and Hamas is still arguably in control in parts of Gaza. And that was so proximate with the ground troops from Israel, and that inability to address the issue of regime change. We now have a hardened leader whose mom was killed, his father was killed, his kid was killed, one or two, depending on the intelligence coming back, who's arguably much more aggressive, more hawkish as it relates to the great Satan, the United States and Israel. And so, they killed many of the people they were hoping to negotiate with. This seems to be improv, with consequences that are jaw-dropping and extraordinary, and a commander-in-chief that didn't take the cues and lessons of the past, the wisdom that was gained by prior administrations. But there was wisdom to your question, and I celebrated it, and I did it immediately after the initial strikes on those nuclear facilities. I, as a Democrat, applauded that effort. Whether it obliterated it or not, clearly it did not, because Trump wouldn't have made the argument he needed to go back for a second strike had it obliterated it. I thought there was wisdom to that, and it took some guts and took some courage to do it. And it was strategic and it was right. So no, absolutely, we cannot afford a regime that kills its own people, a regime that has created more problems in more ways on more days throughout the Middle East, arguably instability around the world, and impacted our foreign policy, impacted our pocketbooks as it relates to issues around petro dictators and Gulf issues that have impacted the cost of oil and the price of groceries in our country. So no, from that perspective, he was right, but he's doubled down on stupid now as it relates to going further. And now we're talking about troops coming from California. We're talking about CARG. We're talking about putting boots on the ground and islands off the mainland of Iran, potentially in the mainland of Iran. It should scare the hell out of everybody. Everyone with a 401k, everyone's worried about the world and the one we're trying to build. Everyone's worried about peace and certainty and chaos. We've had enough uncertainty, enough chaos.
Well,
we want peace.
We got Captain Chaos in charge.
And Captain Chaos is in charge. Yeah. Forgive me for extending the frame.
No. I think it's the right way to think about it, because that's the problem. If you don't think about how you're going to stabilize, and we should have learned this after Iraq, then you shouldn't get into it. It's harder to get out than to get in sometimes. You've recently, in a new interview, doubled down on your support for the state of Israel. That is controversial among some quarters in the Democratic Party. I wonder how you parse and separate and want to lead on this issue, separating the Netanyahu government from support of the state of Israel, and of course, standing strong against the rising tide of anti-Semitism, as you have done.
Well, I love that question. And it's, it's a very challenging environment. Because there's nuance here. I love my country. I love the United States of America. I revere it. I'm celebrating, like many of us, you included, 250 years of this historic project, the best of Roman Republic, Greek democracy, co-equal branches of government, the rule of law, popular sovereignty. We're celebrating why our founding fathers lived and died, that Declaration of Independence. And I cannot stand our current commander-in-chief. That's why I feel about Israel. In the context of its commander-in-chief and Netanyahu and what he's doing and what he continues to pursue, appeasing the hardliners within the state of Israel as it relates to the prospect of the annexation of the West Bank, how that war was conducted in Gaza and the obliteration, true obliteration. I was just watching some reports that showing some of the images still there and the images of young kids whose hands have been blown off, and you're out there trying to use devices. It breaks my heart as a parent. And it's apparent to everyone now that, the impacts as it relates to what's happening in Lebanon, et cetera. And look, I get the Hezbollah. I understand what's going on with the Houthis and all the sort of the proxies that Iran has been behind, et cetera. But I do not like the direction of that nation under Bibi Netanyahu. And this coming from a guy that flew out after October 7th, and not only arrived in Israel, but went to the hospitals, met with people that were the victims of terrorists and terrorism, who survived on October 7th, and went there with a field hospital for the people of Israel because of my empathy and my relationship to the state of Israel. And so, you know, you've got to be able to separate those things, but we've got to be more clear, I think. I'm trying to be clear in terms of my condemnation of the current prime minister of Israel and his leadership and what he continues to pursue, which scares the hell out of me.
Let's shift to domestic. The idea of laboratories of democracy. You have been leading the largest laboratory in the country for 7 years. I wonder what policy from California's record do you think is most ready for national adoption, national model? And what one do you think, you know, wish you'd done differently?
Well, I don't know if I would align just one simple policy. I think it's a value proposition. It's about growth and inclusion. You know, California is the most diverse state in the world's most diverse democracy. We practice pluralism. We celebrate, don't tolerate our diversity. You look at that at scale and scope. Now, arguably the fourth largest, not fifth largest economy in the world, about $4.3 trillion a year in terms of output. The future happens here first. I mean, you talk about quantum AI. You talk about dominance in so many of these key areas, autonomy and robotics. You talk about the future. You're talking about fusion. You're talking about California. And there's been a formula. It's not by chance. It's been a formula. And I think that formula I would talk about more than I would a specific policy. This notion, again, of growth and inclusion, that we're all better off and we're all better off. The idea that you can continue to dominate economically and grow your economy. At the same time, you're worker-centered. We have $25 minimum wage for healthcare workers, $20 minimum wage for fast food workers, $16 minimum wage and $16.90 for everybody else. We believe in that construct. We advanced and expanded paid sick leave. We expanded paid family leave. We expanded our reimbursement of wages in that space as well. We doubled our earned income tax credit. We created one of the nation leading child tax credit. We created college savings accounts 5 years before Donald Trump's Trump accounts, up to $1,500, 5.5 million Californians eligible for these career, not just college savings accounts. We have the largest volunteer corps in America, larger than the Peace Corps. We provide up to $10,000 in return for 450 hours of service. We have the finest system of higher education in the world, public higher education. Four new Nobel laureates, just as a proof point, just last year conveyed from those universities. 18% of the world's R&D, right behind China and right behind Germany, number three on the globe in terms of research and development. Those are part of a formula for success that I believe in many ways can be exported, should be exported. Those are the values that we hold dear. And I think the values that make us so prosperous.
Well, there's a clear contrast, obviously, with what Trump's done with investing in R&D, kicking out graduate students, and obviously that building sense of community. The second half of the conversation is important, too. What do you learn? You know, what are some areas, some things you tried that didn't work out that made you a better leader?
I think the biggest issue, you know, I represent a state larger than 21 state populations combined. You know, like 1,050 school boards independently elected. You have city administrators, city managers. You've got boards of supervisors, mayors, city councils. You're constantly dealing with jurisdictional issues. And I think the biggest mistake I've made when I look back is accommodation. And I could be more critical, self-critical of specific pursuits, but accommodation in this respect. Not recognizing the deep sense of urgency that is demanded at this moment. A liberalism that builds more aggressive in terms of working through the thickets and the red tape and the bureaucracy. People are absolutely disinterested in inputs. They care about outcomes, period. And how much time I talked about process, how I talked about building consensus, all incredibly important things. But we're at a point where people feel there's a crisis in their lives and they can't take it anymore. And Trump understands that. He's understood it. He's exploited it. And I think through the process, particularly coming out of COVID, you know, that mindset began to shift, but I wish it shifted into gear more, much more clearly and aggressively earlier on. Let me give you a proof point on housing. We finally were able to do the most consequential housing reforms, arguably some of the most significant in the country's history, not just in my state. It's the original sin in California. It explains more problems than any other issue, including the byproduct, homelessness. And we were constantly accommodating local interests, accommodating local planning departments, NIMBYs, And we finally broke through that, but it took hardball tactics, attaching infill reforms and as-of-right zoning reforms, CEQA in our language here in California, which is a NEPA version of our state environmental policies, in our budget in a much more muscular way to finally break through the morass of decades of impasse. And so I think about that as an issue that, you know, I may not have had the political capital 3 or 4 years ago to do that. So it's not, you know, it's not, I'm not dwelling on that critique, but I think it's a mindset that I bring today in terms of the urgency of the moment to address so many of the challenges people face.
I think that's such an important point to sort of double click on. And because there are a lot of examples, and obviously I think the abundance movement is based out of California, but, you know, reflects frustrations with California. With the devastating wildfires in LA and the extraordinary pivot, frankly, you've made stylistically, if nothing else, in the wake of that, I think there's something like, you know, under 30 houses have been built out of, you know, 16,000. Is that, and that's after you've tried to cut through the red tape to expedite. Is that a problem with the underlying insurance structure for those houses and communities? I mean, what is the bottleneck there? Obviously a tragic situation. How do you increase that number so it doesn't look like the Biden's infamous EV stations?
Well, let's contextualize and put in perspective. We had one of the most devastating fires in American history a little over a year ago. People were talking about 3 to 7 years to rebuild. Within a year, 4,400 permits have already been issued. There are 1,400 homes currently actively being constructed. You're right about 36 homes that are completely done. By the way, it wasn't, you know, but 9 months ago, 8, 9 months ago, we finished the debris removal. By the way, it was the fastest debris removal in American history. And I do want to acknowledge the partnership that we firmly established before Trump took office with the Army Corps of Engineers and the EPA. And I want to applaud Lee Zeldin for being not a sparring partner, but a working partner in the debris removal. And we do want to acknowledge that. But it wasn't that many months ago the debris was finally removed. And let me give you a proof point of what I'm saying contextually. We had a similarly sized devastating fire in Paradise, California. It's how I first met Donald Trump.
Yep.
85 lives were lost. Northern California, one of the most deadly fires in American history, but also similar size and scope in terms of the structures. There were only 388 permits, not the 4,400 that were issued a year after that fire. So we're on a much faster pace than our critics would suggest, and for many reasons. And you're right. I've done 28 executive orders. We've waived every zone. I mean, there's nothing left the state can waive. We have initiated some of the nation-leading efforts as it relates to AI and permit checks, pre-planned approvals. Archistar, one of our big partners. We're looking at new styles of housing. We're looking at modular housing. We're looking at fast tracking with pre-approved designs and looking at bulk purchasing and looking at making sure that we are leveraging our resources in a much more aggressive way. But I will remind you this, localism is determinative, not a knock, but it's the cities and counties that ultimately are that last mile on these approvals. And so that's an issue, though they're making progress. But the big issue to your point, and I appreciate you framing the question, remains the payouts on insurance and the gap between the higher inflationary costs because of Trump's tariffs, the mass deportation impacts that's had on workforce scarcity, two own goals by the Trump administration, and his unwillingness, number three, to do a damn thing for the people torn asunder in Southern California, hasn't lifted a finger with one red cent in terms of sending to Congress our requests for appropriation to address the anxiety of the residents in LA that can actually address the gap between insurance and costs and get these projects and homes rebuilt. Has not moved forward with a supplemental appropriation for the American people in the state of California for whatever reason. Clearly political, but that is a significant breach as it relates to the president's, and his deviancy on that is almost without precedent in American history.
Well, the precedent is after Paradise, right? I mean, he politicized disaster relief right then. But I think you raise a really important point. The tariffs and the immigration policy have raised costs for everybody if they're rebuilding. Yes. And that's a really important point. Let me ask you about one other one, which is homelessness. You were, you know, I think when the Supreme Court said there's no right to create tent encampments, you were actually in favor of that. You felt liberated by that. You'd been a mayor of San Francisco. Hmm. But at the same time, you'd spent a lot of money, I think some $19 billion or $24 billion on housing and homelessness. And yet the population grew. And at some point, you actually zeroed out one of the lower level allocations, saying you didn't want to fund failure anymore. What are the lessons you took from that, knowing that it is a devil of a problem?
Well, we created a number of years ago, when I talk about housing policy, I do want to acknowledge in 2019, we initiated lawsuits against cities for not producing enough housing. Huntington Beach, infamous, 46 others were put on notice. We created a housing accountability unit. We've unlocked close to 13,000 housing units just with that accountability unit alone. And a year and a half ago, we added homelessness to that new accountability unit. When I got here, there was no state plan for homelessness. There's no strategies for homelessness. It wasn't the job of the state of California when I got here. They completely, every prior governor, it was the cities and counties that were responsible. As a former mayor, I never looked to the state to help me with my homeless challenges in San Francisco in 2004, 5, and 6. It was our state of mind that it's local responsibility. That shifted when I became governor. And we have provided significant support. And now in return, we're demanding accountability. And here's the good news. No other governor has been able to say this in over almost 20 years, 15, 16 years. We saw close to a double digit decline in unsheltered homeless. That's the numeric that matters, unsheltered, the folks out on the streets and sidewalks. We saw a 9% decline last year. It's the first time we've seen that. The year prior, 0.45%. It went up nationally, by the way, John, 18.13%. That same year, overall homelessness in this country. So you're seeing it spike all across the United States, not unique in California. And we had the single largest reduction in homeless veterans in the United States. So we, this flywheel over the last few years, is finally producing results. And look, I'll take responsibility because you know what? I think it's important for people in my position to take responsibility. But I, again, want to remind you where we started. No strategy, no plan. No accountability. Now we have strategies, plans, real accountability. And you're right, we're holding local government accountable to producing results. And if you're not interested, if you're not committed to solving this issue, we're going to redirect those dollars to communities and counties that are. And if you think I'm overstating this, go to accountability.ca.gov and see for yourself. Accountability.ca.gov. Hold me accountable for what I just said, and you'll see detailed investments. You'll see where how cities and counties are producing results or not. You'll see the numerics, you'll see the dollar figure, and you'll see the outcomes, and you'll see who's doing well and who has to do better.
Love the transparency on the data. We could use a lot more of that. Now let's start pulling the aperture back, but bridging this. There's been a proposal for millionaire's tax in California, popular on the left. You have pushed back on that. Like a lot of wealthy states, your budgets are disproportionately, you know, responsive to the revenue from some of those wealthiest folks. My question to you is, if it's not the right fit to do it state by state, because people can move and people do move from California and New York and other places, how do you feel about a national millionaire's tax that would level the field, whether it's the Elizabeth Warren sort of, you know, uber wealthy metric or simply raising that top rate, you know, for folks who make over $1 million a year? Would that be a more equitable way of raising revenue, addressing income inequality without states kind of punching themselves in the face?
Yes. Yes. Look, I had my State of the Union a few months ago. I made a case, a proactive case for progressive tax policies. I mean, you know, we could talk about Donald Trump's $4.7 trillion 10-year deficit that he's created. Debt, increase of the debt, not deficit. My God. I mean, we got $39 trillion and counting. I mean, this is calamitous potentially because of his tax cuts for billionaires, tax cuts for corporations, and then cuts to pay for this, food stamp cuts and cuts to obviously Medicaid and a little bit on Medicare side. And of course, he has no problem that finding the money, $200 billion now he needs to fund a war that he said he wasn't going to get us into and no one really wants. But that said, California progressive tax policy, I think, is sound. And that tax policy is something I believe a progressive tax policy should be expanded to the rest of the country. You look at states like Florida and Texas, they tax their low-wage workers more than we tax our highest-wage workers. So the real question is, who is the high-tax state? Is it California or is it Texas and Florida? It's who are you for? Who, honestly, are you for the 1%? That's our highest tax bracket. That means by definition, I have some evidence to bear this out, 99% don't live in the 1%. All they argue for on Fox, all they argue for in Texas, in Florida, is that one damn percent that have never done better. 10% of people own 2/3 of the wealth in the United States of America, half the consumer spending in this country. This imbalance is literally one of the greatest red flags for our democracy, and that's historic, not just in the context of historically high wealth and income inequality. So look, progressive tax policy is important. Getting back to those old tax brackets, at least a variant of them, and I don't want to be prescriptive exactly what that would look like right now, and creating a new tax bracket for the ultra and uber wealthy and this windfall and that income is important. Addressing this $124 trillion, this transfer of generational wealth in the next decade to 2.5 decades, depending on your analysis, also needs to be addressed. Trillions of dollars will transfer because of the stepped up basis question, tax-free. We also have to look at that. And so across the metrics, we need tax policy reform, and we need to move in a completely different direction than the regressive tax policies of the Trump administration. And with respect, my Republican colleagues and friends.
This episode is brought to you by Pocket Hose, the world's number one expandable hose. All right, so old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but Pocket Hose's new Copperheads Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. It is spring, and we're getting into the garden season, and I know it's a perfect hose that does not take up too much space in your garden or shed. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, you're super light and ultra-durable. Pocket Hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. That's pretty cool. Brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is a total game changer for the gardeners or people with lawns in your life. For a limited time, my listeners can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text FIXIT, all caps, to 64,000. That's FIXIT to 64,000 for your two free gifts with purchase. That's FIXIT to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. Let's pivot to TikTok. California's attorney general led 14 states in a suit about TikTok. You've been aggressive on social media reforms, we should say. But I want to really drill down on this because the two of the American owners now are California-based, or at least one, and one have as a predominant number of its employees, Oracle in California. As you looked at that suit, what do you hope the outcome is? And what do you see the potential for discovery being?
Well, so two things. I mean, we've got two variants on the TikTok theme in terms of just the connective tissue there, the Ellison family. But as it relates to, particularly with Warner Brothers and Paramount, but as it relates to TikTok, you may recall when the TikTok deal was announced, and apparently there's a $10 billion tithing as part of that deal, a fee that TikTok will be paying. That needs to be illuminated a little bit more. I think all of us are owed a little bit explanation what that's about. I mean, you know, this crony capitalism, the state capital. I'm in Ronald Reagan's old building right now. I believe in free enterprise. It's a healthy horse pulling a sturdy wagon. I think Churchill said that. I'm a guy who started a small business right out of college, put pen to paper, created 1,000 jobs, 21 small businesses. I say that honestly, not to impress you, but to impress upon you my passion for entrepreneurialism. And the Democratic Party needs to talk more about that with the kind of pride. You can't be pro-job and anti-business. That said, this crony capitalism, state capitalism, where people are getting golden shares, 10% of Intel. I mean, this is stuff that makes President Xi blush. 25% of NVIDIA, AMD, MP Materials. How about what just happened with Donald Trump Jr. and the Vulcan deal on the magnets? His valuation, because they got $625 billion loan after the Pentagon, after the family invested in this rare earth company that was valued at $200 million. Now it's valued at $2 billion. I mean, this just open corruption, the likes of which we've never experienced in our lifetime. So that marked some of my anxiety around the original announcement on TikTok. That's one thing. But then we started to see right after that deal was done, Trump wasn't part of the algorithms. There was a lot of news on Donald Trump that wasn't getting into our feed. Seemed curious and coincidental. I was surprised no one else was curious about that. And so we initiated at our Department of Justice an investigation. I will say, to the credit of the new CEO and the former CEO of TikTok, they both visited with me. They've provided a lot of information to us that we're reviewing, and they lay claim that was a data center issue, which is curious to me that a data center would be attached to one name.
Does that sound incredible to you?
To their credit, they were very solicitous. I'm just trying to be fair here. I'm trying to call balls and strikes. And so we're in the process of reviewing that, as we are what's happening with all these other mergers, including, by the way, John, forgive me, what's going on with Brendan Carr and the FCC is an outrage.
Yes.
It's so unsettling. It's perhaps one of the biggest stories in this country, what's happening with Nexstar. They're going to have 80% market share in our households. I don't think this, I know this.
It's a violation of federal statute.
Yeah, which they waived, right? Brendan Carr waived 39% threshold, now is allowing 80% because he wants more conservative media surround sound in our households. And it just said it in plain and open sight. The same guy, Brendan Carr, who said he wants war coverage to change or you're not going to get your relicensing your broadcast license within the next year. He literally said that to the dear leader, until we change our war coverage. Brendan Carr.
So those two things are connected. If you were president, you know, President Trump is ignoring a 9-0 Supreme
Court. That guy'd be fired within a nanosecond. Carr.
Well, I wasn't curious about that. I think the question is, you know, can you relook at and relitigate some of these deals that may have been dodgy and violated fundamental statute? Again, Donald Trump is in violation of a 9-0 Supreme Court order, because the underlying basis of TikTok still hasn't meaningfully changed. So would you enforce the Supreme Court's ruling and U.S. law if you were to become president? Would you shut down TikTok?
I've been doing this a long time as mayor, working with my city attorney, recognizing the independence of my district attorney, then Kamala Harris, interestingly. Working as governor with my AG, independently elected, though I did have the privilege of originally appointing him, but he's been independently elected since. And working with those agents, they'll make that determination on the laws. But I will assert a point of view, and that's why we initiate litigation. We respond. We just announced, by the way, our 65th lawsuit. I don't even think there's been 65 days I haven't counted of the Trump administration. Not one of them we proactively sought to advance. They're all in response to this lawlessness of this administration that, correct, is completely connected to the Supreme Court decision, his own of the congressional determination as well. And he just completely violated that with no recourse, because you have a supine Congress and it's not the rule of law anymore. It's the rule of Don. And this is why I'm so aggressive on my social media. It's why we're so aggressive in terms of our litigation posture. It's why we did Proposition 50. It's why I'm out there, you know, trying to raise the alarm bells. And again, Brendan Carr is just the latest. And with everything going on, people need to pay attention to what's going on. And I'll be honest, I'm surprised only 8 states are litigating as it relates to this deal with Nexstar. I mean, it's remarkable to me.
It's a huge deal.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. Remember, Brendan Carr is the same guy who applauded Nexstar for taking Jimmy Kimmel off the air. This is state media. This is Pravda. This is stuff. This is literally Orban's Hungary. This is Erdogan's Turkey. This is Putin. I mean, this is real life. It's happening in real time. The tithings, the corruption, this board of peace in the Middle East, which is about getting a piece of the Middle East, world liberty financial, the corruption in plain and open sight, the likes of which we have never seen in American history. And it's happening on our watch.
I want to go there with what regard a president can do to unwind this. But before we do, I just want to double down on TikTok here, because you in California are in a unique position to get discovery, to get some insight into the algorithms, to figure out whether they've been pushing pro-Trump messages and throttling anti-Trump messages. But just basically what we already know, do you believe that that China has been pumping, you know, addictive and divisive and dumbing down messages into the United States via TikTok propaganda that's benefited Donald Trump in 2024?
On the basis, I have no particular evidence to bear any relationship to the facts, but what has been asserted is pretty overwhelming. What has been alleged, including by the president of the United States himself, the great irony of all of this, suggests that's certainly been the case. That said, the question for us, the case in front of us, is a separate and different one. And that's what we're currently reviewing. And as I said, and it's interesting, it's not easy for me to say this when we're going to war with so many folks. They were quite candid and forthcoming, the team at TikTok at the highest levels, in providing us the kind of information that we sought. And we're currently reviewing that. And it's being reviewed by the, not by the politicians, by the experts and the folks, the AG's office, the DOJ, where it belongs. And again, that goes to your question in terms of just how we, just the weaponization, this idea that we have the supreme leader, Donald Trump, whose pictures are on the side of the DOJ, and he's dyed in purple as if he's an emperor, is alarming beyond words. Those need to be taken down, and they can't be replaced with a Democratic version. We have to rise above that and let the facts, the facts dictate that determination. But on the basis of accountability, we also have to seek accountability, because accountability is fundamentally about trust, and we have to be repairers of that breach of trust in this country.
So that's where I want to go next. You know, the next president is going to have a difficult decision, as Joe Biden did, about what the right balance is between healing the breach and restoring trust and ensuring accountability for the laws that have been broken willfully, the corruption, as you've detailed, that has gone on. As you think about the possibility of running for president, what do you think that right balance is? You've taken a very combative tone on social media since the fires. Playing offense has worked. It's worked for you. But doubling down on that strategy as president might not work for the country. So how do you think about that balance between accountability and healing?
Well, look, you know, in the spirit of Isaiah, we need to be repairers of the breach. And we're all exhausted. I mean, for the last 10 years, it's been a decade defined by Trump and his grievances. And it's exhausting, you know. And ever since he came down that damn escalator. And we're going to finally have a president where we can, you know, a presidential campaign, where we can finally put him in the rearview mirror, we think, as long as we take back the House of Representatives. Watch that space. This guy is not screwing around. I got a sheriff in Southern California that, in the spirit of Trump, has just taken 650,000 ballots. He's also on the ballot running for governor of California. That's happening in real time. I mean, these guys are not screwing around. They're ruthless. I mean, that was what the whole effort to do the mid-decade redistricting is about. That's what they're doing down in Fulton County. That's what he's doing on vote by mail, even though Donald Trump had no problem voting by mail in his latest
election. Don't look for consistency.
In his backyard. But man, just this got to be called out. The SAVE Act is nothing more than saving the Republican Party and MAGA from transition accountability. Donald 100%. Trump understands what's at stake. He knows he's going to get shellacked in the midterms. He'll do whatever it takes. He did it after January 6th, tried to wreck the democracy, tried to light it on fire, called for those 12,000. I mean, he will go to lengths the likes of which we've never, you can't even imagine the lengths to which he'll go. And I don't think this, I know this, we're on the receiving end of it, including what Bannon said again, not for the first time, just yesterday, as it relates to what ICE represents in the airports. Secret police took an oath of office to Donald Trump, not to the Constitution, and how they'll be weaponized and thrown out around Election Day and polling booths. It's what they tried to do in L.A. last year in our election in November, the Prop 50 election. They sent BORTAC teams, Border Patrol Tactical Units, Apache helicopters, the morning of the election to send a message to our diverse communities already on edge because of the immigration raids. Exactly. So we, the people, the No Kings rally, is, you know, that's happening obviously this weekend, and everything, that energy and daring that is so foundational to this democracy. But the issue of accountability is also foundational, because you can't be a repairer of the breach unless we hold those in power and privilege to account. It's not one set of rules. And that's what Epstein represents. You still haven't addressed the accountability question there. It represents a different set of rules for the elites and people in power. And you've got this new regime, a level of elitism, the likes of which we've not experienced, arguably, in 250 years of our nation. And it's at least the declaration. And so objectively. And so I think it's foundational. I think it's table stakes. Whoever, forget me in this context, whoever takes that oath of office is also taking an oath, dare I say, to the office, to the Constitution of the United States. And it'd be nice if someone who takes that oath actually read the Constitution and didn't just preach about it, but practiced its core principles. And rule of law is foundational in the spirit of our founding fathers. And, you know, having co-equal branches of government is also foundational, and be nice to restore that. But again, that comes this November with Speaker Jeffries.
But so to be clear, the next president, whether it's President Newsom or someone else, you think needs to elevate the debate, but also ensure accountability, legal accountability for anyone who broke the law.
Yeah, it's behest. In one of my favorite books, Built to Last, talk about the genius of and versus the tyranny of or. It's both and, you know, the genius of and. Forgive me, I lost everybody on that, except to say, yeah, I think you have to knit that back, and you have to do both, because you by definition are doing both. It's not weaponizing grievance. It's not pursuing retribution in the spirit that defines Trump and Trumpism. It's not about vengeance in that respect. It's not that. It's simply about accountability, that the chips fall where they may. And look, I'm a son of a judge. And, you know, that's the partisanship that's taking over the courts. I don't like it on either side. I just want to go back to objectivity, facts, the rule of law, and these foundational principles that we're supposed to be celebrating this July.
Crazy dreamer. No, that's what we do need to get back to. All right, we got a few more minutes left. I just want to ask, as Trump's tearing down the East Wing and building the ballroom to himself and talking about an arc to Trump, I mean, these are self-made monuments to a living person. Now, apparently, we're getting a dollar coin. How do you ring on that bell? I mean, personally, I think we should tear down everything he builds to himself, make sure no one can do it again, and rebuild what he tore down. What do you think?
Well, there's a lot to back that up. I mean, this ballroom is, you know, I mean, it's the Kremlin ballroom. I mean, it's, you know, talk about corruption. I mean, just, you know, pay to play in every respect. It's shameful. That's why I'm selling those damn knee pads. You know, told you the first one sold out, and, you know, like our law firms and universities have been selling out, corporate leaders. And we got the new Trump Signature Series knee pads, quite literally available on our Patriot site, which I do encourage people to take a look at. The money goes to the Campaign for Democracy.
Yeah, very gonzo with the promo.
But it's a way of just calling this out, man. This is unconscionable. It's like, when's enough enough? What, you got to hit that trillionaire status to finally be someone? You didn't get enough hugs from your mom and dad? I mean, what the hell are you pursuing? You'll wreck this country. I said you can't be pro-job and anti-business, but I also say this, businesses can't thrive in a world that's failing. I mean, don't these guys understand the interdependence? Don't they understand?
Apparently not.
Their connection to all of us? And you know, so forgive me that long-windedness, but yeah, no, look, as it relates to the arc to Trump, as it relates to the Trump Kennedy Center that he had to shut down because no one wants to show up, as it relates to the vulgarity that was the cornerstone of the why we had a declaration in the first place, these imperial tendencies, the, you know, birthday party that was the military parade, you know, this sort of parading and around the sycophancy and the sort of kissing of the ring, you know, this just rank corruption, all of that must stop. And I'll tell you, these guys, they should all be on notice, including, you know, all of them should be on notice. Pendulum swings. That's not a threat. I'm just saying, just history, pendulum swings. Just, you know, do the right thing. Don't sell out. Don't sell your soul. Don't sell our country out. Don't sell our kids and grandkids out.
It's not worth it.
I mean, Jesus, it's not worth it. You're going to pay a huge price. Reputationally, they already have, these guys. They just need to stop. They need to have courage. They need to stand up to the bully. They need to stand up for the American people. And I'm not, all my stuff, John, and all our going after Trump is not about being anti-Trump. It's about being pro-American. It's standing up for the ideals.
You're highlighting
to
find
the best of America. It's putting a mirror up to it.
This show is sponsored by Superpower. So you ever walk out of a doctor's appointment feeling like you got absolutely nothing useful, maybe they told you, hey, everything looks fine. Or just drink more water. No real data. Definitely no game plan. Well, I want to take more ownership of my health, so I'm giving Superpower a look. It's one simple lab draw with over 100 biomarkers, way more than you usually get, which unlocks a real understanding of your body going into 2026. Their app includes detailed information on your heart, liver, thyroid, hormones, metabolism, vitamins, mineral levels. So whether you're focused on disease prevention, clearing up that annoying brain fog, or optimizing your performance at the gym, Superpower is the most comprehensive and advanced system out there. Superpower doesn't just give you a one-time snapshot. It tracks your results over your lifetime. Each test builds on the last, so you can see real progress year after year instead of starting over from scratch every January. Stop only reacting to health problems. Start proactively improving your health based on real personalized data. Make this the year you stop guessing about your health with Superpower. And not only did Superpower reduce their price to just $199, but for a limited time, our listeners get an additional $20 off with code FIXIT, all caps. So head over to superpower.com and use code FIXIT at checkout for $20 off your membership. And after you sign up, I'll ask how you heard about them. So make sure to mention How to Fix It on the Bulwark with John Avalon to support the show. Appreciate you. Go get super healthy with Superpower.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games that's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
All right, but you mentioned history, so let's pull back for a second. Trump took a shot at your dyslexia. I don't even want to dwell on that because it's so cheap and bullshit. Yeah. But yeah. I was interested to learn that you actually are a big fan of Plutarch. chronicled the lives of ancient Greek and Romans and talked about the importance of virtue and character, things we really need to remember again. I ask you that just to say, what do you take away from reading Plutarch and what applies to today that we need to remember?
Past is prologue. I mean, you know, look, everything we're experiencing, we've experienced before. And I think it's really important. I mean, I know this time's different is always the mantra. This time is different. This time's different. It's not. And Plutarch is a proof point of that. He was also, among many things, an historian. And he was, you know, lived around, you know, 25 to 100 AD, somewhere in there. Don't quote me. But, you know, here's an historian warning the Athenians 2,500 years ago, literally over 2,000 years ago. He said the imbalance between the rich and the poor is the oldest and most fatal ailment of all republics. He was warning the Athenians about the history of wealth and income inequality. Fast forward to today, and I talk about the best of, you know, Greek democracy, the Roman Republic. That's where founding fathers took inspiration from. And it's a remarkable year. Defined by all these headwinds, Trump who's just destroying our inheritance, and how important in the spirit of the No Kings rally, how important people watching are at this moment, how important the people were, the steel spines of the citizens of Minnesota. That's why Trump's in retreat. Finally, the spines we started to see, they started to reappear even in Europe. NATO standing up a little bit more aggressively, at least partially, and people like, you know, Carney finally standing up to put pressure back on Trump as it relates to Greenland. He exploits weakness. And if you stand up to Trump, all of a sudden there's respect there. I think he respects strength. He deplores weakness.
Bullies only respect strength. That's why the sycophants are the first to get the shiv.
Exactly.
All right,
people have more courage, and that's why it's important for us to maintain that strength. And that conviction to keep our eye on the prize, which is not 2028. It's all about 2026. It's about taking back that house, and it's about starting to repair this damn place. And that's why I cannot impress upon folks more. Don't focus on the guy or gal on the white horse to come save the day in 2028. There may not be a fair and free election if we don't win back the House in 26.
We are citizens, not subjects. Final question from Plutarch to the present day. This is a fun one, but you would be the first Gen X president. Be about damn time. So, perennial question, favorite book, favorite album, favorite movie of Gavin Newsom?
Well, I wasn't lying about Built to Last. It was one of the most inspirational books. I kid you not. It really helped build a consciousness, a mindset. They also talk about being clock builders, not timekeepers. It's really a book. It's for business people out there. If they haven't read it, it's one of the, it should be required reading for any business leader, but also political leaders. It's an extraordinary book of leadership, not just stewardship. As it relates to album, it's funny, I'm smiling because I was just, for whatever reason, I was listening to an old Billy Joel album, My Life, this morning, and I was like, oh man, I was just flying through it on Apple and going, I remember days of the, the greatest, today was the greatest hits. And I was just reminded, it reminded me of so evocative of that time of life in a state of mind. It's all about time of life and who I was at the time, all my insecurities, being a teenager and, listening to all this great music. But, that would be up there. I'm an old Pablo Cruz guy. I liked ELO back in the day. I'm just going back to the golden oldies. I know.
ELO. Everyone, wow.
I know.
I did
no
not see that
Electric
coming.
Light Orchestra. No, I know.
No, I figured I'd get a little U2 REM from you. I don't know.
No,
maybe a little Grateful Dead throwback.
Well, I was just at Bobby Weir's funeral, Memorial Dead. Come on, the best of the best. I'm an eclectic. If you went through my little phone right now, you'd find, it would actually alarms me a little bit who would be the kind of folks that you see on my feed.
So
what was your other
favorite
question?
Favorite movie all time.
Well, I'll tell you, and I write about it in my book, Young Man in a Hurry. Encourage you to read it. In the book.
Click on the Amazon link below.
I talk about the movie that just inspired me and kind of got me out of my shell, and it was Rocky, man. It was. It was, again, back to time of life, state of mind. How a moment moves you. Where I can watch that movie today, it means something very different to me. But at the time, it was motivating, was purposeful. I bought the album. I had the posters. In the book, I write about how I did a boxing ring, got my Everlast boxing gloves down at the Big Five Sporting Show, started boxing everybody outside. And I was this kid that was getting bullied and, had a little bowl cut. And I was just starting to develop some confidence. So let me thank Rocky Balboa, including, by the way, yes, I indulged in lots of raw eggs, which, oof. I can't even believe I played into that.
And you're still around to live to tell the tale.
Still around.
Gavin Newsom, California governor. I appreciate you coming on How to Fix It, dropping some wisdom and getting into some of the policy specifics, because we don't do that enough in these conversations, and we need to, because that's what it's all about.
Appreciate you, man.
Thank
Thanks
you very
for having
much
me on.
Doing this.